Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This first episode of 2021, which is episode 91, is being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, once again, broadcasting upstairs at Russell Ridge Animal Hospital from beautiful, slightly dreary, I guess maybe is a better way to describe today, Lawrenceville, Georgia. Happy New Year, Angel. Is it Happy New Year or Happy New Year's?
So,
it's how you use it, right?
I would think it's how you use it, but it's really kind of funny because I see it in both, like text and people say it that way. I always say Happy New Year because it's 1 year, right? But I think when people say Happy New Year's, it's like Year's Day. Like
implying they're talking New about Year's Day.
The day.
Yeah. Yeah. I sent a text, is why I asked to somebody a couple days ago, and it was, yeah, Happy New Year's with no apostrophe. Just Happy New Year's exclamation. So, pretty controversial there.
You know how we like to be.
So, all right, this is kind of a, maybe we're not super prepared for this first podcast of the year, but let's kind of see how it goes. I don't really have a word of the week or year or day even. Do you have anything that comes to mind?
So, no, I think we mentioned this just briefly before coming on and recording this, but I feel like I haven't been at work for like a week, but it's not actually true. I was here on Thursday for a half a day, and so essentially I've had all day Friday, Saturday, and today is Sunday off, but essentially it feels
three
like
to four
it's
days
been
is a
forever.
Long time. Yeah.
So no, I don't have a word of the day because I don't feel like I've been here in days.
Okay, I have a word of the day.
Okay.
So this morning I came in to repair a broken leg, tibia, on a yellow lab, and come to find out when I called the owner prior to taking the dog to surgery, she did let me know that it was she didn't tell me this, but it was a compound fracture. So I think most of us have heard that growing up related to a broken leg or a fracture. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a compound one. And I used to always think that meant it's like really bad. It's really complex. But do you recall what compound means related to a fracture?
I would just think it's complete, like, entirety of the bone.
Close, but no cigar.
Okay.
Compound actually means that it's open.
So I was
going to
go there, but mm-hmm. Isn't there another word for that?
Open. I don't know. No, it means the ends of the bone fragments break the skin, and then it's considered an open fracture, and it's also considered to be contaminated and/or infected.
Can you have a compound fracture that is like not completely broken? You know what I mean? Like where the bone is absolutely severed, can you just have fragments that puncture the skin and consider that a compound fracture?
I mean, in theory, yes. But really, I mean, anytime that happens, the bone fragments are sticking through the skin and there is bone exposed. So, the other, relating to fractures, the other common term that we often use to describe a fracture is comminuted.
I thought you were just going to say broken.
Comminuted, and that just means multiple fragments. So, a lot of fractures are two-piece.
So, you can have a comminuted compound fracture?
You sure can.
Is that what you had today?
I had a very comminuted compound distal tibial diaphyseal fracture, yes.
Diaphyseal. What's that mean?
Yeah, well, that's just the main part of the bone. Not the metaphysis or the physis or growth plate, but the diaphysis is the main body part of the
bone.
Are
you a doctor or something? I think you're trying to impress us with your big words.
Well, it's just, yeah. So, anyway, there you go. So, anyway, I hope that our little patient Nova does well, but he's got quite the recovery ahead of him based on his size and the type and location of his fracture. So, so compound, open fracture, the skin is broken, the fracture segments are considered contaminated and or infected, and then comminuted, a multiple pieced fracture. So, how was your New Year?
My New Year's pretty good. Very
new year
low
or New Year's?
My New Year.
Okay.
My New Year's Eve and New Year's Day was pretty good.
Okay. Pause.
Yes.
What is either the family tradition or your newly made up tradition to eat? What type of food do y'all eat on New Year's Day for good luck?
So,
and it has to be on New Year's Day. It can't be
okay,
before
but like,
or after.
Traditionally, it's going to be like black-eyed peas and collard greens and that kind of thing. Like one to bring luck, one to bring money. However, I can't tell you the last time that we've actually had like a prepared dinner like that on New Year's Day. It's, I mean, probably not in my adult life. When I was a kid, it was very traditional. But also, needless to say, both of my parents are quote unquote under the weather at the time, so I didn't see them for the New Year, which is very I don't know, unrealistic, but I try not to be, or not unrealistic, but
unusual.
What is that, unusual? Yeah, I try not to be super superstitious or way superstitious, because like the fact that I didn't see them at all on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, like, does that set me up for the whole year that I'm not going to see them as much as I typically do? I
wouldn't think so, but evidently you're kind of superstitious.
No, I have to talk myself out of being superstitious. Same thing with like Christmas decorations, right? So I grew up, I don't know where it came from, but I grew up hearing that it is unlucky to take your Christmas decorations down before the first of the year.
Huh.
So here we go, like, I don't know. I guess I've always kind of thought this, but Lance this year started taking down our Christmas decorations because he was off on New Year's Eve. And I was like, oh my gosh, when I got home, I'm like, Lance, you took down the Christmas tree. And I asked him, I was like, well, I guess we don't really believe in that, right? And he was like, definitely not. Definitely do not believe in that.
Oh gosh.
So anyways, as far as traditions go, I do not have any newly created traditions. I honestly can't even tell you what I ate on New Year's Day.
So,
just a couple days ago.
All right. So growing up in Texas, it was always black-eyed peas for us. Never knew anything beyond that. Moved to Georgia, and it was collard greens, as you said. I think black-eyed peas for luck, collard greens for greenbacks, right? For
money.
My mom informed me a couple of days ago that this year, she, I can't remember if it was before or during, but long story short, the German traditional meal to eat or food to consume is cabbage.
Oh,
and
I
so
believe that.
She was going to go ahead and do some cabbage. So she was doing black-eyed peas, no collards, but cabbage.
Is your mother German?
She's not. She's not. And it was cute. She went on to tell me how she cooks her cabbage. I'm like, Mom, I know how you cook your cabbage. I used to love eating your cabbage. So,
is it like sauteed?
Cooks it in a pan with some carrots and some bacon.
Mm, so sauteed.
Yeah.
Sauteed cabbage is my favorite.
Yeah.
Used to like actually turn my nose up at cabbage anytime it was offered, but sauteed cabbage is actually very good. I not that this relates to veterinary medicine
Food
at
Network
all.
All of a sudden here.
But I like my vegetables to have a little bit of crisp even when they're cooked. And like cabbage, I think you can saute it and it retains that like little bit of crunch and also
like
lots of flavor.
The rib, or is that what you call it? The thick part?
Yeah, a heart is what they call it in lettuce. So I don't know. Does cabbage have a heart or a rib?
Neither. So, okay. So there you go. Well, we had collards and I guess that's what you call them if you eat them often, which I don't, so I should call them collard greens and black-eyed peas at the Miller household. So
on the relation to food and animals,
yeah.
Do you remember this time last year we were talking pretty heavily about an FDA pet food recall in regards to foods that were making pets sick and potentially being related to dilated cardiomyopathy?
Yes.
Okay. So
grain-free diets.
As of like today, the FDA actually published its first dog food pet recall of the year. And it is specifically one brand called Sport Mix, which I've never heard of it. So I looked it up. It can be found at like Tractor Supply, Walmart, Chewy.com, some of these other places. And it's typically, I guess they they make it appear as such that it is for the working dog, right? So like your hunting dogs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But apparently the FDA is recalling this after 28 dogs fell sick and died.
Oh, wow. And so what happened to them, did it say?
So liver toxicity, it's an aflatoxin.
Aflatoxin, a fungal toxin, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Aflatoxin.
Yeah, so super crazy, again.
We've not had that as a problem in a while. You know, melamine was kind of a China contaminant.
And we saw that in a bunch of food recalls, actually in prescription diets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I just thought it was super interesting. So I feel like they were super quick to jump on it because I haven't heard anything about it, but I guess maybe that doesn't really mean anything.
Maybe it's like we've talked about COVID, just the immediate dissemination of information.
Mm-hmm.
Right now you don't have to wait on a paper to come out to be published in a journal.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. So Aspergillus flavus mold.
Aspergillus flavus mold.
Aspergillus flavus.
Aspergillus flavus. Flavus.
Anyone
that can spell that correctly and email it to us within the next 24 minutes, you win nothing.
24 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyways, I thought that was interesting. So yes, liver toxicity, liver damage. These pets are sluggish, loss of appetite, vomiting, jaundice, which I think we've had that as a word of the week before, which essentially is yellowing skin, and diarrhea. So it appears as if it's, I don't know, a pretty quick onset. But again, the articles that I've read don't really say.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that type of aflatoxin toxicity, if you will. I mean, pretty quick, yeah.
There's a Facebook user that's noted in the dailymail.com, which is an article from the UK. So this food is actually sold in multiple countries, and it obviously is sold here in America, and it's being recalled by our American FDA. But this Facebook person says that 3 weeks ago, out of nowhere, the dog was healthy, and then it passed away. So within a span of 3 weeks.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that can happen due to anything, as we know. But, and we can jump on the bandwagon of some of these off-brand, maybe no feeding trial, AFGARD? AFCO feeding statement.
Mm-hmm.
But as we know, one of our primary recommendations for food underwent a recall. Was that last year or the year before? Year before, I think.
So it was the year before, yeah.
So it can happen to any of these manufacturers.
But so for a lot of these bigger corporations and those that are, I will say, supported by the veterinary industry, they have undergone less pet food recalls than those giant commercial brands.
Sure.
So if we're talking like Procter & Gamble Foods, right, which you name it, anything you see in the grocery store from Rachel Ray Nourish to Beneful, Purina, all of those guys have gone under fire for more than one thing before.
Dick Van Patten, Rachel Ray, I don't have anything against either of them, but it's still I'm flabbergasted to think that they can come out with a pet food and people just flock to it and think it's got to be so good because she's a human chef, cook.
I mean, yeah, she makes food in under 30
minutes.
So,
marketing, yeah.
Just kidding.
So, is she a chef or a cook? What's the difference?
So, you know, I don't really know, but I do not think Rachel Ray is a chef. So, I don't know if it means that you've actually gone through, like, culinary school, or if you just kind of pick up some of the techniques. She's a very skilled cook, chef, whatever she is, but I do not think that she's an actual chef.
And then I was watching Food Network, is it Beat Bobby Flay? Is that the name of the show?
There is a show called Beat Bobby
Flay. I actually like that. It's pretty funny. But there were a couple of chefs that were Michelin, one-star Michelin chefs.
So?
Michelin like the tire. So I've heard that before. I know that's like a really high-end either award or honor, but I don't really know why.
I don't know either. I think, again, totally not veterinary related at all. But I feel like culinary arts go back to France and Italy. And I think Michelin is actually a founder of one of the arts. While you're looking that up, I'm actually going to share here that Rachel Ray, according to culinaryschools.org, says that while she is bubbly and quite chirpy, she is not a chef. And she actually says that herself. Huh. And the reason being is that she received no formal culinary instruction. Okay. She is essentially a cook.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So, yes, Michelin, three-star restaurants, I'm looking up. It's a term that refers to the annually published Michelin Red Guide, the oldest European hotel and restaurant reference guide, which awards up to three Michelin stars for excellence in cooking and chefflery. It doesn't say that, but whatever it means to be a chef. So, so that was cool. So last week when we signed off, you
gave a little teaser.
Talked about the Marama dog.
Just briefly, yeah.
So, Zoos Victoria is trialing "quote unquote" guardian dogs, which are Marama breed. The full name, do you have that in front of you?
Marimano abruzzese.
Okay. So hence why they shortened
it to... Probably really killing that.
Marama. But what caught my eye was a couple of things. Number one, guardian dogs, which I thought they were talking about guard dogs, is what I would refer to them as. But they look almost exactly like a Great Pyrenees, which is what we had back in Ropesville, Texas, on the sheep farm, and we used them as guard dogs. And so we were having a problem with our, you know, now that you ask, I'll tell the story. We were having a problem with many of our sheep at night. The coyotes or coyotes, depending on where you're from, would actually get into these pens. We would have these lots with up to 400 head of ewes and or lambs, and the coyotes were brave enough to crawl under the fence, get into the lot, and they would stalk and track down and kill one or two of the sheep, and they would drag them out of the pen, and then they would eat them, and we would find
them.
Oh, my
gosh,
it's kinda,
that sounds horrifying. Kind of gory.
But my dad, I don't remember how he figured this out or who he talked to, but he decided that we're going to get some Great Pyrenees pups, and so he bought two, probably 12-week-old Great Pyrenees pups. They were, gosh, 50 pounds at 12 weeks old. The adult dogs are about 120 to 150 pounds. And so kind of the cool thing is we were instructed by someone to basically do not treat the dogs as a pet or really as a dog. They need to be treated as sheep. And so we had their feed placed in a feeder inside the lot or inside the pen, and we did not interact with them. We didn't pet them. We didn't talk to them, and they basically lived with the sheep. And
so it makes them.
The minute we did that, though, we quit losing sheep to coyotes. So
I guess
they
are super loyal to their flock. Mm-hmm. I've read or heard, but that's interesting.
So it was really cool, but. So
I feel like we've been down this road too, right? Like people used to have kids, you know, to do their work on the farm, and it's the same reason they had dogs, and then suddenly like now their kids are playing basketball, mm-hmm. piano, violin, you know, like suddenly people's lives have centered around the kid, and then obviously around the pet as well. So it's just interesting to see that total shift change.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there are still people obviously that use their pets
as working dog, yeah.
And quite frankly, yeah. Probably still use their kids as well.
Yeah, exactly.
For chores and things around their house, which I guess if you have an opinion, it's probably yours to have.
Yeah, there you go. So back to the Marama dog. So they are being utilized, hopefully, to protect 20 tiny eastern barred bandicoots.
What is a bandicoot? I know from Sega, Crash Bandicoot looks like a fox.
You know from what?
It's a game. Like the Sega Genesis, Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
It was a game.
Well, these little bandicoots, they look like mice or rats or what I would call a ground squirrel or a chipmunk. They don't really look like chipmunks. They look more like kind of wild rats or mice.
Oh, gosh. That definitely did not. I'm looking it up right now. It definitely did not look like that in the cartoon.
Okay, well, that's why it's a cartoon. So
they have long noses like anteaters.
Long story short, So this is Melbourne. This is Australia we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to protect these 20 bandicoots from foxes because they can't fence in the bandicoots to keep the foxes out and the bandicoots in, I guess. And so, long story short, they are using the protocol that we use, bringing something in to guard them versus, I don't know, they can't. Humans can't kill the fox. So they're using the dogs to protect the bandicoots from the foxes.
So the foxes are protected from human endangerment, but not from the dog endangerment. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know what I'm saying.
Oh.
Can't keep the foxes out of the pens where the little bandicoots are, and so let's put something in with the bandicoots to protect them.
And the dogs obviously don't care about the bandicoots, even though they're little bitty things.
Yeah, I'm Sounds evidently like not. Don't. I mean, they're not hunting the bandicoots, otherwise the trial is going to fail.
One thing that I have been reading since you have been talking about your bandicoots is that Great Pyrenees are bigger, significantly larger than the Merrima. And okay. The Merrima were brought to the United States in the 70s.
Oh. How much, what's the average weight of each?
Oh gosh, let me see here.
So this article, while you're looking that up, goes Size. On to say that the Merrimas, the reason that they're using them to protect the bandicoots is because a little well-known fact is that the Merrimas are also used to protect little penguins during breeding season in that same area.
That's cool.
So, again, weird.
I was like literally probably 25 years old when I realized that not all penguins lived in cold climates. I know that sounds ridiculous.
Huh.
But I actually did like a behind the scenes thing at the Georgia Aquarium where I actually got to meet a penguin. Very cool, total neat experience. Penguins are attracted to red objects, apparently. Don't ask me how I know.
Why?
The size of a Merrima, a male, should be anywhere between 77 and 99 pounds, and the female 66 to 88.
Okay.
And then the
Pyrenees are about 1.5 times that.
Pyrenees, yeah. So males like 110 to 130.
Yeah, yeah.
And females a little smaller.
We have several Great Pyrenees in the practice, and certainly have historically.
Clients, yeah.
But you said, yes, they are very loyal dogs, like many dogs are. So they do tend to guard the family and protect them as well.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, that is the story of the Merrima dogs and the
a bandicoot
Easter
is a marsupial. Did you know that?
Bear bandicoots.
Did you know that a bandicoot was a marsupial?
I'm not surprised, but I can't say that I knew that.
I did not know that, but I'm not surprised either.
So they're extinct on Australia's mainland, and that's why they're trying to protect them at Melbourne Zoo/Zoos Victoria. Huh.
One of these days, I think work should take me on a trip to Australia.
Okay.
Don't you think that would be fun? We could do like a work trip.
Yeah, that's so far away, though. That's the only negative.
Yeah, but if you go for a long enough time, it doesn't really matter, right?
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see if we can make that happen sometime soon. So, do you have anything else to talk about or...
Just kind of how we did as a clinic rounding out the year. Overall, I mean, we've talked a lot about coronavirus. We've talked a lot about our staff and how proud we are of them. Kind of rounding out the year, every clinic did well. Every person did well. We acquired quite a few new people. We had some natural attrition of some...
Hired, not acquired.
Acquired, hired, same difference.
Okay, yeah.
We had some natural attrition of some people that decided that, you know, the work wasn't for them or decided to move on or move away.
Yeah.
So I'm totally stoked for 2021. We have our first new hire of 2021 starting on Monday the 4th.
Okay.
And I think it will really help set our Hamilton Ridge location up for success.
What's her name?
Her name is Austin.
Okay. Welcome, Austin.
Yeah. So I think it will really help set that up. We have Heather Brown returning from maternity leave in the month of January. So I'm pretty excited for January. It seems, I was thinking about it this morning. I got my new car February, maybe last year. It literally feels like last month. Like from February of last year to December of last year.
It was
a very short blur, but a very long, stressful event. Does that make sense at all?
It does. It's analogous to children. And when your children are 21, you tell people with young families, oh, enjoy them. It goes by so quick. You know, it's all of a sudden it's gone before you know it. And while you're going through it, man, it is long and hard. Those days sure. are so long. And so that's what it's like. I mean, when you've got a newborn at home, a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 13-year-old, it is a struggle, but it's like anything. When you do look back, I absolutely agree with you. When I look back, I can condense my thoughts into maybe 20 thoughts, then it would take me a minute and then I'm done with it. So
I was just reflecting this morning and I felt like, gosh, is it literally January? Like, yeah. I feel like last January was like just here,
mm-hmm.
even though I felt like late February, early March through December was a very long struggle bus.
So two other thoughts for me. The older you get, the quicker time goes by.
So I've actually heard that, and I would agree.
In your mind.
I do see that. And I think it's because I've thought about this, right? I think it's truly because, like, when you're a kid, it's like you anticipate, right? And the anticipation makes it seem so much longer. You anticipate summer, right? So then summer is like, even though it's only a short, you know, 6.5-7 weeks, it just feels so long because you've waited for it so long. And here, now that we're adults, I guess our lives don't change as abruptly, right? Like, you're in school, you're out of school, you're in school.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that seasonal or that change like that. It's just the same thing day in and day out. If you have a job, you go to work, anticipation, you come
home. But also memories. And, you know, when you're five, you only have 5 years worth of memories to reflect on. When you're 50, you've got 50 years worth. And so your mind kind of condenses that to look back. And so
I never thought of it that way.
Christmas to Christmas is the same number of days. But I mean, I picked up on this when I was probably 30. I'm like, God, Christmas just keeps coming quicker and quicker every year that goes by. So I do think that reflection is also kind of responsible for the way you think of that.
So, you know, what's interesting about that whole Christmas comes faster. When I first moved into my house, so I'll be living in my house now 6 years in March. When I first moved in, I kind of made like an agreement with myself, like, I'm going to celebrate every holiday, be it Valentine's and St. Patrick's Day or 4th of July, by like decorating the house and making sure that like I'm living in the moment of each event.
Yeah.
And I would say like a couple of years ago, I did that. And then last year, that was definitely by the wayside. I think we had the same decorations up in March that we had in December until we decorated.
Just life was so busy otherwise.
On the 20th for Christmas, like literally. But I definitely think that this year I will try to do the same thing. Try to like live in the moment, every day for what it is, you know.
You should enjoy every day if you can. And yes, enjoy your life as you live it, not just work towards a goal that you might never get to. So one thing, you know, 2020, some of the radio talk shows and other sources of information I've been listening to, you can look back at 2020 and say, oh, it was so horrible. You know, look at all the bad things that happened, and bad things did happen and still are happening. But you can also look at how resilient many people are and were during that time. Our staff would be a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And how recovery has happened for many, certainly not all. Again, there's a lot of people that are still unemployed, especially in the hospitality industry, I would think, travel industry as well, which I guess is hospitality. But a lot of recovery, if you look at what the stock market did when it crashed initially and how low it got, and now it's well at its highest mark ever.
Yeah.
In spite of what's going on. So, I guess that speaks a lot to maybe why we do live in the U.S. and what we're capable of. So.
No, and I think I'm definitely looking forward to what 2021 brings for us in the veterinary hospital and what it does for people's pets. As we said, throughout coronavirus, and obviously the pandemic is not over. I don't know, like, if one day the just like a switch will flip. Pandemic's over, you know? Or will it just slowly phase out over time? I'm not really sure how that works. But I think it, we talked about it multiple times, and it definitely showed us that pets have a huge place in our lives.
Yes.
And I think in 2021, it's just going to be that much stronger. I'm looking forward to
getting to meet and know some of our clients, especially our new clients, because right now we see the pet, we recognize the pet, we usually know the pet's name, and we probably know the last name, but we don't have that relationship with our clients. And I know based on conversation, car side, before or after an appointment, clients are missing that interaction as well.
Of course.
So it's going to be weird when we do it again, you know, when we start opening back up, but that human to human interaction is so important, in what we do. So,
yep. We will definitely keep everyone posted for when our lobby is open and our doors, remain unlocked, but, we don't have any plans for that in January thus far.
Yeah, correct.
So, all right, guys, we'll check in next week as we discuss more in the news and things that are in and out of our industry.
Like food.
Food, yeah. We'll probably talk a lot about food. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe or download wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.